Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hultgren along with Ken Evans covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And this week, it's a fight every day.
Every day.
All the days you get a fight from the UFC. Obviously, we're going to start where we should start, at UFC 189.
Where's the podcast number?
We are on 289.
Sorry.
289.
I didn't realize episode, I was calling you out on that
episode
one.
Episode 289, I believe, is the one that we're on right now.
Okay.
Hold on, let me look it up.
Are you confused by all the fights?
282, sorry. Yeah,
282.
282 is what we are. So at episode 282,
we've done as many episodes as we've had fights in the last 3 weeks.
In the last 3 weeks, yes. So we start at UFC 189, which at this point seems like it was a week ago, but it wasn't. It was 5 days ago, as Conor McGregor did... sort of exactly what he said he was going to do in beating Chad Mendes. And I'd like to start there because I know that you were particularly animated about what was going to happen to Conor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it did happen to Conor.
Yes.
It just didn't pan out the way that Chad wanted it to.
Well, you know, Chad admitted afterwards, he said, you know, I did essentially what I wanted to, and I got a little anxious, and I tried to finish the fight maybe when I shouldn't. I hadn't done a whole camp. I wanted to try to finish this thing, and I got caught. And, you know, he was annihilating Conor McGregor. He was smashing Conor McGregor. He was winning that fight, and he could have won that fight on the ground. I give him credit for trying to finish it, and he got caught. You know, I'm not going to say this was a bad stoppage, but I was a little surprised in a championship fight that it was stopped after Conor McGregor was able to hit him 3 or 4 times on the ground when he was covering up. He wasn't getting hit clean. It was a situation where he was definitely finishing the fight. I'm just surprised when that stoppage happened. And, you know, Conor did a great job. He impressed me a lot. Money-wise, this makes great sense. This is amazing. This
sure,
is the best,
yes.
This is the best thing business-wise they could have gotten, essentially, is you still get a Conor McGregor win, but you've got Chad Mendes, who's a legit dude now, and everybody knows he took that fight on 2 weeks' notice, and everybody knows he didn't have a full camp. And, you know, he might have gotten a little anxious knowing that. He looked a little bit tired in that second round, just grinding on Conor McGregor. And some of that could have just been the fact that he's in the middle of a fight, and he hadn't planned on it up until 2 weeks ago to be in that fight. I thought it was very interesting. So you still have Conor McGregor with the win, but you have a Conor McGregor that looked completely outclassed in that fight. It reminds me a lot of that Anderson Silva fight, where Anderson was able to catch Chal at the end of the 5 rounds in the triangle, even though he had been outclassed the entire fight. Well, in this fight, Conor McGregor had essentially been outclassed, even in striking, up until that final exchange. And he was able to catch Chad Mendes, finish the fight, and rightfully so. This fight's his. I'm not going to take any of that away. It was an amazing night of fights, but it's certainly one of those things where we all saw that fight, and I think almost everybody watching that fight is like, man, Aldo's going to eat him up now.
Well, here's what I saw. I don't totally disagree with you. I saw a guy whose wrestling is terrible, and worse yet, you know, as we've been talking, you and I have been talking, I've been talking in the office, worse yet, when he gets to the ground, he is a zero threat level.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't try anything. He didn't adjust his guard. He didn't sweep any. I mean, he eventually worked his way back up. But
that was Chad saying he was trying to do something.
Yeah, so
and Chad made a mistake.
Chad loses position, and Conor gets back up. But at no point are you, you know, I was comparing this to Charles Oliveira, right? So if you put Charles Oliveira, and this is not a great comparison, but one I think that is easier to understand because he's a jiu-jitsu phenom. You put Charles Oliveira in there against a super high-level wrestler who has better takedown than Charles has takedown defense. Charles is still going to sub the crap out of you when you get to the ground because he's a legit scary threat when you get down there. Conor got taken down and was zero threat down there.
You know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. He's the interim UFC champion now. He won that fight. But I swear, watching him on the bottom reminded me as much of Kimbo Slice on the bottom as I've ever seen anything before.
Sure.
And isn't that interesting? I mean, Kimbo Slice isn't the guy we're ever going to talk about in a championship picture. But yeah, Conor McGregor on the ground didn't look like a threat at all.
Now, here's where I'm going to disagree with you, though, because I think standing up, he does something that a lot of people don't give him credit for until the fight is over. He is brilliant at powering down fighters with body shots as opposed to headshots. You know, in MMA, and we'll talk about Frank Mir, right? That's what people want to see. Two dudes trying to knock each other's head off, and eventually one of them crumples, and that's the end of the fight. Conor isn't doing that. He is setting up those teep kicks and those liver kicks and those body kicks to power you down to get in the position that he did to end up winning the fight. So while you may think that he was outclassed striking, I'm going to holistically disagree with you on that.
Well, I'm only laughing because I'm literally watching highlights of the fight right now. They just started running on my computer, and I'm just showing up until the end. Chad Mendes is knocking the crap out of him. So if you want to go back and watch the highlights, I'll send you this link, Eric.
Please do. I just think that,
but at
you
the
know,
end, he squared him up, and you're right. The body shots took a lot out of him, and that could probably lead to the stoppage. That helps answer that question, because I did watch that stop, and you go, not quite sure what's there. Body shots, probably. I did not have the advantage of being able to watch. I saw the replays, but I didn't have it on DVR. I wasn't able to watch it over and over again. So, you know, that makes some sense. And I agree with you that, you know, he was able to work Chad into that position. I just think it's very interesting. And again, I love the fact that he was very respectful at the end, because I didn't necessarily expect that. We didn't know how far Conor McGregor was going to take the bit, so to speak.
Sure.
To take the gimmick. And he was very respectful afterwards. Thanked Chad for taking the fight. But I wonder if that's the same Conor we get if Conor loses. I wonder.
I don't know. And you saw some of that bad sportsmanship on Sunday night that we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think he was right to thank Chad, because Chad certainly saved the payday and saved the pay-per-view. And
he made him a lot more money in the future.
Totally. And, you know, let's not be shy here. This is the best event you've seen in 3 years. I'll say that hands down. From top to bottom, UFC 189 was just...
Well, yeah, and you had a co-main event where both of those fights lived up to the hype. Not mentioning the undercard, which was great as well. I mean, the undercard can be great, but if those main events don't pan out, it doesn't matter.
No.
And what happened in this night is it all was working out, and everything came to a head, and we had an absolute war in Robbie Lawler's fight, and it was, you know, Rory McDonald just going toe-to-toe with him. I know we'll talk about that in a minute. So the fact that, you know, they were able to essentially live up to the hype even with the main event after that co-main event is amazing in and of itself. On top of that, you've got the hype train that's Conor McGregor. You've got a legit dude that's only ever lost to the guy that actually holds the belt in Chad Mendes. And those guys put on a great fight. And I applaud Chad Mendes for trying to finish the fight. Probably strategically not the best move, but one he thought he had to go for with only 2 weeks of camp and being in the situation he was. Even more interesting to hear yesterday, as of the podcast taping, that apparently Conor McGregor hasn't wrestled in months because of a knee injury, and that's why he didn't look so good on the ground. I haven't seen Conor a lot on the ground, so I'm not going to try to decide whether or not that was the case, but I think there's certainly some interesting aspects here about the coaches making excuses at this point.
Yes, but would you agree that they kind of have to, right? Because you can't...
Oh, I mean, sure, because at the end of that fight, everybody's like, Aldo's going to eat you alive,
yeah, Aldo's going to murder you.
You
right?
won this fight, straight up. You beat Chad Mendes. Aldo's going to eat you up if you do that.
And the only thing, in my opinion, that makes that hype train derail faster than not giving an excuse, and I'm not saying it is an excuse or isn't an excuse, but, you know, talking about the knee injury, is what they then do on Sunday night, which made zero sense
to me. I didn't like this move, and I know you don't like this move.
Zero sense to me. So Sunday night, they have a big announcement, which everybody on the internet, you know, starts to make fun of, because none of us, myself included, and I know, Ken, you haven't been a fan of the show in what they are in 22, so 18 seasons. So,
No, I was around Kimbo. It was like season 6, right? Kimbo season.
16 seasons.
Kimbo season.
They announced that Conor McGregor is coaching The Ultimate Fighter, which...
Against Uriah Faber.
We don't even need to get there.
Right, I understand that, but I just want to say that because a lot of people were under the assumption that because of that dust-up that they had before the fight, which was very weird, by the way.
Yes.
Because Conor did run away from...
Into a closet.
Into a toilet.
Right.
Literally ran away from Uriah Faber into a toilet in that dust-up, which was very weird because Uriah clearly thinks they're joking at first. And here's the reason I made fun of that, and then we'll get back to... I'm derailing slightly.
No, you're fine.
But this is hilarious.
It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
It's hilarious, though, because all of that happened, and you kind of look at it and go, wow, that was weird. Wow, that was a misunderstanding. I don't know what happened. But I do remember Conor McGregor coming out later. He's like, yeah, I was close to an arm drag under hooks if I wanted them. Like he thought it was a real dude. You ran into a toilet, and now you're talking crap later. So yeah, he's coaching against Uriah. So a lot of people are like, okay, are they going to fight? But they're not even fighting.
So they're not even fighting. So number one, you have this guy who's now red hot because he's been tested in battle on the biggest stage, the best pay per view they've had in a long, 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 long time. People are super fired up. Ravenous for you to tell me when Jose Aldo is stepping in the octagon against Conor McGregor, which has its own issues that I'm going to talk about in a second. You know, ravaging, ready for this announcement, and you roll out this announcement that, oh, you know, he is red hot. What way could we cool him down? Put him on our terrible reality show that nobody watches.
I think.
And put him against not Frankie Edgar, who said, hey, man, that was awesome. We should do this because who the hell knows when Aldo's coming back? Let's do that. I respect you. I thought that was awesome. We could make some money together. Let's fight. And Dana goes, oh, that's a really great idea. Instead, let's put you in a camp for 6 months on a TV show against Uriah Faber, who you won't end up fighting.
Well, to be fair, Dana White said the exact opposite. And there were a lot of people going, who's his next fight? Who's his next fight? I understand Dana's reticence to do any other fight at this point because, you know what, he's got to thank some lucky stars there. He's still got the Aldo McGregor fight to promote at this point. And I get that that's what he wants, but a lot of people were talking about this. You know, my line of thought here went, he's got to fight Frankie, he's got to rematch Chad if Chad wants it, and maybe Aldo then. Or whenever Aldo's back, he fights Aldo, but we don't know when he's back.
Well, and let me ask-
Dana has straight up said, though, he said after the fight, when he was asked, who's next? Frankie, I think it was Ariel Helwani. I asked him, who's next? Is it Frankie? Will Chad get a rematch? Who's on Aldo? He said, it's only Aldo. That's essentially what Dana said, because he only wants that fight. This sounds to me, this Ultimate Fighter coaching assignment, like Dana's tying him up for 8 months to give Aldo time to get back because he wants to promote that fight. And I understand the thought process here, but I think it's from a flawed place. I think this thought process works and is viable 6, 7, 8 years ago when the Ultimate Fighter was still something. It's now a very niche program. It's something we all kind of keep an eye on. Who are these fighters? We'll watch at the end and see what happens. Are the coaches interesting? Are they going to fight each other? That's what this program's become. I know they tried to introduce the new wrinkle with team versus team, and we had the finale with ATT and Black Zillions on Sunday. I team-wise, who actually won? I forgot.
I don't
know. Was it the Black? I think it was the Black Zillions, because somebody on Twitter joked about everybody from ATT then leaving to join the Black Zillions because they had some money. Anyhow, in this instance, I think they really think this show is still something that it was years ago. And they're hoping that this gives him a bigger platform, so to speak. And they're probably hoping that he brings eyeballs to this platform. I'll certainly check it out, but you and I know even the most interesting fighters in the world coaching this show, it becomes a little bit monotonous now. We know the drill. We know what's going to happen. I don't know what you're going to inject into this, even with Conor McGregor, other than his giant personality, which is something, I'll be honest, I'll pop the DVR on, but like you said, momentum-wise, you're going to waste. You're going to waste.
Well, and then
and that reasoning, I think, has to be Dana White's waiting for that Aldo fight, which I don't necessarily blame him for.
Okay, but I'm going to offer a counterpoint of a statistic that you may or may not have heard all week long. And even on Sunday on ESPN, Chael Sonnen was talking about this. And I think this is something that we need to pay attention to, and Dana and Lorenzo need to think long and hard about. Aldo has pulled out of 5 title fights.
Yes, and we talked about this on the show 2 weeks ago.
Right, but so when you say this is the only fight to make, how many times can you make it? How many times can you go, Aldo, 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 broken rib, broken foot, headache, subbed toe, whatever.
Here's the other thing I'm wondering inside of this show, and I don't know the commitments, and I know the fighters do their own camps in a certain way. I have to wonder if we still aren't on a Conor McGregor timeline where he could take a fight while he's coaching. It's clear as day that he's not going to fight Uriah Faber, essentially, until we need him to fight Uriah, and because nobody else is there to fight.
But I still think Frankie's a better fight, though.
I do, too. I want to see the Frankie fight. I want to see the Mendez rematch. I will buy the Mendez rematch. Tell me when that is. I'll buy it.
And
But you and I both wanting to see those fights is not the same number of people that want to see him now fight Jose Aldo. So it's a little bit of this and that everybody's trying to weigh all these pros and cons. First thing I thought of, I thought this sucks, but I understand it when I heard about the Ultimate Fighter.
But I just, when you hear that statistic of 5 title fights and you pair that with the fact that I don't think any other UFC champion has pulled out of 5 title fights.
Those weren't all his defenses though, were they?
They were all title fights.
Okay.
So, I mean, we'd have to look up and figure out if it, but I mean, yeah. he came into the organization, won the title, and then has been defending it for mm-hmm. a decade, right?
Right.
So he's pulled out of five defenses, and nobody else has done that. It would make me a little gun shy, as much as I want that payday.
Yes.
That I don't know that having a backup plan is a great idea, A, but I don't know that I would make my backup plan tough.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think it's the backup plan necessarily. I think what the plan is to try to make what up to this point going into it may be one of the biggest fights in UFC history. I would argue probably Silva Sonnen 2 is still bigger.
There may be another one we could talk about later on in the show that might also be bigger.
I think you're stretching. With a combined age of 85?
Yes.
No. Let's not do that right now. But I would argue that you've got the potential to have one of the top two or three fights going in probably the modern era. And you want to try to keep that fight. I think it's worth a couple extra months on the shelf and giving up some momentum. I guess I'm not making an argument for the Ultimate Fighter, but I can certainly see why they're doing that. And at least it keeps him busy. At least it keeps him in public. Because, Eric, honestly, if you're trying to make this other fight here, because what you don't want to do, and I get Dana's thought process here, what you don't want to do is start handing out interim belts and then having that belt go back and forth too much. As much as my dream scenario is two other fights, do we really want to see a situation where Frankie wins a close fight and now he's the new interim champ, but Conor wants his shot back, but Chad would have beat him with a real
sounds like Monday Night Raw. I like that.
Yeah, we would have all that going on with what is an interim belt. And
yes,
I get that we'd always have Jose coming back, and we'd also have the Aldo fight in the future.
So what? But
if you've got a chance at that, do you want to keep him in there for momentum's sake?
Yes. I totally agree, and I don't want to mince words here. I'm not saying I'm not willing to wait for the fight. I just want some
idea when
some satisfaction that it's actually going to happen from a guy who's pulled out of five title defenses.
Well, Aldo says he's going to be back in the gym.
Right, of course he does.
Can't even get through.
No, because like
he says he's going to be back in the gym next week, which puts him at least
hurt by September.
No, stop. So when are they getting Conor right in there right now, or does he have to wait? What's going on?
I don't know when they're filming it, because I guess I must have missed the part where they did the tryouts, right?
I don't honestly know.
Well, because they fly by. They do them like at 2 in the morning in Vegas, and then 16 guys show up in a house, and we're doing a season. So I don't actually know when they're filming it, but it'll air, I'm guessing, in October.
Is that when it's going to start? Because if that starts, that means that Conor wouldn't be done with it because of his guys until he would have to come back to a camp with them, essentially, if he's actually going to. And again, he might just blow off the actual coaching and leave it to whatever his guys are going to do. But I mean, October, we're thinking December, January, where they do the finale.
Right.
So there'd have to be a month in there. I mean,
so Super Bowl?
July to. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that first week. Yeah, that first weekend of February, the Super Bowl card.
Because most people who are listening to this podcast are going to hate me for saying this out loud, but my initial thought of the other announcement this weekend of UFC 200 was that they're going to make us wait till July of 16 to see it, and it'll be at UFC 200.
See, I think that'd be a bad idea, because I don't think you shelve this dude for a year, and I don't think you leave Aldo to train too much. Just don't do that. February's not a terrible timeline. I know this Ultimate Fighter thing's weird. And it might keep him out of the gym and might keep him out of trouble. And I don't think he's going to necessarily get into trouble, as much as he's got that mouth on him and he's got that charisma. I don't think he's a trouble guy.
I think you hit it on the head 20 minutes ago when you said, how far is he going to go with the bit? I mean, this is just shtick.
Yes.
Right? This whole thing is shtick.
Yeah. Well, and I think we saw some of that after the fight. He was certainly contrite in the fact that he was able to win, even though, I mean, he got beat up. You and I can disagree on the striking. And again, the end, who had the more effective striking? Of course, it was Conor McGregor. But man, I don't think Conor McGregor expected that guy. Remember, what is he, 6 inches shorter?
8 inches.
8 inches shorter. He was working up and in on Conor and popping him left and right. Like, I couldn't tell you how surprised I was after the fight that Conor won. I was even more surprised than I would have been before the fight, and I didn't give the dude a chance. Simply because, man, Mendez is walking right up under him.
Sure.
He's walking right up. He's caught him in the jaw, caught him in the side of the head, caught him in the body. I mean, it was pretty amazing to see the fact that it didn't seem like, especially in that first round, that Conor knew what to do with his length. I mean, we've all made the comparisons to John Jones for the division. That's how his body type stacks up when it's at 145. it didn't look like John Jones in that division. It looked like a guy who didn't quite know what to do with his length. Yeah, he would land shots here and there, but the guy was 6 inches shorter than him and coming in and under for that first round. So I thought it was very interesting there that he doesn't necessarily know how to use that length yet. He's been getting by on his talent, which is amazing. But he's getting up there with these guys, and I've said this over and over again, where that's not going to get him through the fight, and I really don't think it would have gotten him through this fight except for Mendez's self-admitted mistake.
And we'll have to see what happens when he goes back to the drawing board if he comes in a different fighter or a more evolved fighter. You know, we've talked a lot about Ronda Rousey, right, and how she wins her first 7 fights with arm bars, and all along she's getting better at striking and better at striking and better at striking, and now she's using strikes to set up judo throws and, you know, ending fights with punches. And so it'll be interesting to see what that evolution looks like and when and if we get the Aldo fight. The co-main event is a fight that people will talk about that changes the fighters dramatically. Both of those guys walked out of that fight changed human beings. The question remains as to, you know, is it for better or for worse, specifically in the Rory McDonald case, where he nearly finishes the fight in the 3rd round and then just gets outpaced and finished by Robbie Lawler in the 5th in an absolute classic UFC, modern or otherwise, fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, this was a war for these guys. This was a fight where not only did he almost finish, he was ahead on all the scorecards, Rory was.
All of them.
But it was in that first round where Robbie landed the blow that started breaking down his nose. And a lot of guys get hit in the nose, and a lot of guys have broken noses at the end of fights, but he was peppering him throughout the fight. And even when he was losing, Robbie was busy. I mean, this is what a champion does. He keeps working, he keeps working, he keeps working. And it became a certain point for Rory McDonald where his body just couldn't do it anymore. And it wasn't a particularly hard blow, considering how hard Robbie Lawler can throw. I mean, yeah, I'd pee my pants and crap myself if I were hit with that punch. But wasn't a particularly hard blow, but it was right on the button there on a nose that he had just been breaking apart. And you could just see the wince, and the body just gave up. The will and the spirit were there. The body just couldn't do anymore. There's a GIF floating around after the fight where Rory's just sitting up, and you think, okay, you've seen this 100 times in fights. Every fight you see this, there's a KO. The guy, oh, man, they stopped the fight. He sits up. He goes, man, that wasn't me today. It just didn't happen today. And he's okay, essentially. Rory was not okay after this fight. Rory was beat up. He was hurt. He was likely concussed. He couldn't sit on his ass on the mat. They weren't even trying to get him into a chair, and he couldn't stay up. This was a fight where he literally gave everything. He was winning on the scorecards. He almost finished the fight, and I know it sounds like we're jumping way too far ahead here, but it's not inconceivable to me for a guy like this in a fight like this to be considering, well, is this what I want to keep doing? I've had it happen a couple times like this, never this bad. You know, he's like that. He's that dude that he's the Uriah Faber of that division. He only seems to lose to champions, essentially, or guys that are going to be champion. And that's what's happened to him a couple times at that championship level. And it's going to be tough. He's going to take a while to come back. This is what the guy does. This is what he's built for. But Robbie Lawler, man, he showed that he's a true champion in that fight, too. It was really amazing to watch that fight.
And you talk about, you know, peppering the nose and seeing the hole and going after the hole in the fighter's game. This literally came down to fight IQ. And even Firas Sahabi was talking about it, that Rory was fighting at a 3-round pace and turned it up in the 3rd round expecting to finish. And Robbie wilted but didn't fade. And then it was all downhill from there because Robbie's fight IQ and his ridiculously iron chin allows him to hang in there long enough to figure out how to finish the fight, because he wasn't going to outpoint Rory McDonald. He had to finish it.
He had to finish it. Now, I don't think he necessarily even knew with that fight IQ necessarily what that was going to be. But as a champ, he knew he had to keep working. He had to keep doing what he was doing. And that's what allowed him to finish the fight, because I was watching that fight and it was just going back and forth. And then I'm watching, I'm like, Rory's winning this. Rory's winning this. He got beat up hard in the first. Remember, that's another thing, too. He was able to fight his way out of that really bad first round. But, you know, that foundation was laid for Robbie Lawler later in the fight in the first round. And that's why you'll always hear coaches when we talk to them on shows and fighters with that high fighting IQ say, you've got to keep pushing. You've got to keep working. You've got to give everything, because you're losing this fight, but you won the fight essentially, because you laid that groundwork in the first round. Because I don't even necessarily think, even with that, Robbie won that first round. We can go back and forth on that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But certainly the other rounds there, he was ahead on the scorecard. So
Rory was.
So it's interesting just to watch that kind of fight. It's always kind of cool to see that fight ethic pay off, too, because for some guys, it just doesn't. Some guys will go in there and they'll keep fighting, they'll keep scrapping, and you know the storybook ending doesn't happen for them. And I'm not rooting against necessarily Rory, but a lot of times you'll see guys with that work ethic and with that toughness, they still don't pull it out in the end. You saw Robbie Lawler do that, and it was a pretty amazing thing to watch in that fifth round.
Who would you like to see next? I mean, there's been some conversation about Hendricks. However, this is one of those fights that I think everybody, you know, we talked about the Chad Mendes rematch. This is one that everybody would be like, I'll see that third version of this fight again.
And then do they do that next, though?
I don't know. And then there's a third component that people who clearly, like yourself and myself, watch way too much professional wrestling and are making the call for George St. Pierre to come back and avenge the
See, this is why the poor guy can't freaking retire.
Avenge the Rory loss.
Avenge the Rory loss. I don't think GSP wants any of that, Robbie Lawler.
I mean, if you think back to the day he retired, what he looked like, what Hendricks did to him, no, he does not want any of that.
And we'll talk a lot more about deterioration in a couple of minutes when we talk about Fedor's unretiring, but... You have to be realistic, and I think George is one of the smart dudes. He realistically looked at his deterioration in his last couple fights, probably felt it, obviously, and he knows he's not the champion he was. Now, is he still better than 99% of the dudes doing this? Probably. Problem is, most of that 1% works in the UFC. Is he better than 9 out of 10 of those dudes? Still probably. But it's those couple of dudes, those Johnny Hendricks guys right now, Robbie Lawler, Carlos Condit. You know, those dudes, is he going to beat those guys for sure? That's not a slam dunk by any means, even for George St. Pierre at this point.
But back to the question, what do you want to see?
I don't know. This is interesting because this is one of those fights where I watched it and I was already, I think I texted you my lineup for the McGregor fights. Like, oh, this, and this. This was a fight where I watched. I'm like, why don't we just give these guys some time? Why don't we just let these guys have some time to figure out what's going on? Because it was really one of those fights. It was an amazing fight to watch. But afterwards, you know, I felt like it was a rough fight to watch by the end of it. And, you know, it's what we watch MMA for. But sometimes you wonder if it just went a little too far. And that's what I'm wondering with these dudes. Yeah. Obviously, Robbie's fine. And, you know, we've got Hendricks lined up. Rory, I don't think, probably even dropped a spot with that performance.
No, for sure. And, you know, he's got a broken foot and obviously a broken nose. And remarkably...
Oh, I didn't know about the foot.
Yeah, remarkably, only out for 63 days, which I think is incredible.
Well, that's just...
Incredible.
That's just incredible. That's their initial...
Like, because I would be
suspension.
Out for 2 years. Like,
you would be dead. Stop. I would say something nice at your wake, but you'd be dead.
Yeah, so I don't know what I want.
That'd be episode 293.
Yeah, I don't know what I would want either, but again, this is another one where I'm willing to wait 6 months to see Robbie again.
Do we see Carlos? Do we Woodley's still in the picture,
Woodley's
right?
Woodley's still in the picture.
I mean, I'll take any of those two. See, that's the other interesting thing is Robbie Lawler. Again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show. It's amazing how under the radar this fight was. Robbie Lawler's a pretty big star in the UFC. The fact that he was able to highlight, package himself, essentially, on what is the biggest card so far this year in the UFC is going to pay off big time for him. He's another dude that should write Chad Mendes a thank you letter.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because he's going to headline the next pay-per-view. I'd be very... Unless it's Aldo. Unless it's a heavyweight fight, maybe. I mean, he's gonna headline that next pay-per-view. They're going to want that welterweight division to carry pay-per-views now. And Robbie can do it. I mean, I'm paying to see Robbie... Condit. I'm paying to see Robbie Hendricks. I'm paying to see Robbie Woodley. Any of those dudes at this point, I will pay to watch Robbie Lawler fight. I'm not saying I wouldn't have before, but I think a lot more people are on board with that than there were just a week ago.
And the other people that I think need to be thanked are Matt Brown and Tim Means being in the prelim card. That was a brilliant win by Matt Brown and another super tough guy at welterweight. Tim Means started throwing elbows, and Matt took offense to that through his own elbows, and guillotined him before the first round was up. Then you start with brilliant bantamweight fight as Brad Pickett is destroying Thomas Almeida in that first round. Mm-hmm. And Almeida turns all Mortal Kombat and hits him with a flying knee that made maybe one of the most disgusting sounds I've ever heard in my life as he cracks him right in the skull, KOs him in the second round in the first 30 seconds.
What was interesting about that sound, too, is because we all know that the UFCs are pretty dead to start now. I mean, they're not quite at boxing level.
Right.
But when you have a double main event on this card, people were filtering in late, so you had a little bit of quietness almost in the arena at that point.
Oof. Which added to the
And then the coconut
the,
fell
yeah.
up from the ceiling or something.
Then Gunnar Nelson just plowed through Brandon Thatch, which was another great performance of Gunnar Nelson. While Jeremy didn't make weight, he was 4.5 pounds over, which I don't know what happened
That helped
there.
His flying knee.
It certainly helped his flying knee in the third round as he TKOs Dennis Bermudez. It was just a brilliant card from top to bottom with lots of fun fights to make afterwards. And the other thing I wanted to say, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but I did want to say all of the production changes at 189,
yeah.
I loved every minute of
I
it.
I thought that was great. I can't believe how many of you are so concerned about what another man wears, by the way. That's all I saw on Twitter is everybody can... Like, really, we need skull and crossbones on everybody? I get it. It's not as unique as it used to be. And I also miss the corner guys screwing up, dropping the banner over
sure.
half the time. Because half the time they screwed up, so it was kind of funny.
Right.
But, I mean, I love the look of it. I love the professionalism, so to speak, that you kind of saw stamped onto this. You know, even the goofy intros that we got to see in the title fight. You know, production-wise, I think the notes were dead on. We've kind of been seeing an adjustment here and there, and I did. I love the production elements. You know, I ordered this one on my PlayStation, so I wasn't sure what it would look like. It turned out really well. I'm not advocating for that, by the way, because I hear it can be terrible. It's just like a coin toss.
Right.
But I was watching it, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I mean, the way it looked was good. And maybe we just needed something different. Maybe not banging me in the head with gladiators as much as I miss them is a step forward.
Yeah, and some of the nuance that I think all the graphics are cleaner. I really, as a fan, especially when you're trying to learn the new fighters that are on the lower cards, I love having their name up for the entire fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really helpful. I thought the video on the octagon before the main event, super mm-hmm. cool. I don't know how often they're going to do live music as intros, but
right.
I thought that was really cool.
Well, whenever Sinead O'Connor's pissed about Kim Kardashian.
Yep, and if they're going to bring Joan Jett to
Did
Brazil.
Did you hear her call the C word? She called her the C word.
All right, though.
Okay.
I
want to wrap this segment there.
I thought all that was cool. You didn't get the same thing the night after, as Fox Sports 1 didn't have the same level of production. They kind of...
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I'm trying to figure out if that's because of Fox Sports
or yeah.
if the UFC is trying to differentiate their levels, which I think is smart if they're trying to do that. Let's remember, essentially this graphics package, as much as it's changed, and we saw a little bit of a jump when they actually went to Fox, it's still a 2005 graphics package. It goes back to Shamrock and Tito Ortiz the first time.
Totally.
So the fact it did need to be revamped. It was a little busy in spots. It was clunky in spots. It was designed originally, you could tell, for standard definition televisions because there's a lot of big blocky things
right.
that were on the screen.
Yes.
This just looked a lot better.
And then, you know, like Ken said, don't know what the difference is between Fox and the pay-per-view or if you're only going to see this card. You saw some of it on Wednesday night, which we'll talk about here in a minute, but wanted to hit the highlights of the ATT versus Blackzillions. As we said earlier, Usman of the Blackzillion team ends up winning by submission in the second round. Steven Wonderboy Thompson, a spinning hook kick to KO Jake Ellenberger, which is... interesting, at 429 of the first round. Wonderboy is going to give people a lot of trouble.
Is that another super kick finish here in the UFC over the past 2 months?
Yes.
At
welterweight. So watch for him. I know Ken was super excited as the Karate Hottie makes her debut and wins in the third round with submission.
Yeah.
So that was very fun.
Let me Google and see what she looks like.
And Jorge Masvidal, another big win by KO.
Yeah,
and he was calling out Matt Brown, which I thought would be a really interesting fight that we could see someday, somewhere down the line. And we are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, there was like 19 other fights this week. So we'll talk about those.
Yeah, and
as
they
well.
Were all about 6 hours ago.
Yes, they
as
were.
As of this podcast.
Six season. Hours ago. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hulgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, and it's been a busy one. Last night, as the recording of this podcast, you had Frank Mir and Todd Duffy in what I would call a very fun fight for Frank Mir, in that he won, but boy, he says he was fighting emotional. I just think terrible heavyweight fight.
I'm not going to lie. I have not seen this fight yet. This is stupid that this was on as late as it was last night.
I loved your tweet.
This is stupid. Yeah. what I'm saying now is nicer than my tweet because, look, I get up early. I get that. I'm on a different schedule than most people. But come on. This was going till 1 in the morning. I was watching last night. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch the Mir Duffy fight night here. So I'm watching, and I realize as I've started to get a little more cognizant of this ridiculous schedule, I'm watching the freaking prelims at 9:15 at night.
Sure.
Wait, this isn't even starting until 10? Like, if they want to start doing that, that's cool. Bring the main event out at 10. Let's do a peak.
Right.
Let's get to the peak at 10 o'clock and let it be a little mountain on the schedule. Because, shut up. This is ending at 1 in the morning on the East Coast. The All-Star game didn't go that late. And baseball started that thing at like 8:30. I mean, this starting at 10 is stupid. I haven't seen the fight yet.
You can tell me whatever you want. The NFL doesn't do that either, right? Like Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, none of those things go to 1 a.m.
No, the only time that Monday Night Football goes late is when they do two games.
Yes.
And one is on the West Coast. And it's for the West Coast. As Joe would say, it's not for us. So this is stupid.
But Wednesday night,
10 o'clock.
Terrible, terrible. But
that's when it starts.
Frank Mir wins in 1:13 in a very
nobody saw it
in a very ugly scrap.
Here's the other thing. I'm going to stop you right there because I want to keep ranting about this.
Go ahead.
How stupid is this to do on the only night of the year? This is the only night of the year, essentially, where they call it no sports night because it's the night after the All-Star game.
ESPYs,
right? Well, that's why the ESPYs run this night.
Right.
The ESPYs are on, but I don't think you're really competing with
them.
No,
that's what I mean.
Especially on ABC.
Like, there's no sports. Like, the ESPYs are on so that there
that's
is...
That's it.
Right, yeah.
There's no baseball games. We're out of football season. We're out of hockey season. And we're out of basketball season. There's no college basketball. There's no college football. There's no NASCAR races. So we've covered almost the top 10 of any sports that are actually interesting to people in the United States. So on no sports night, instead of starting this son of a bitch at 8 o'clock and just raring toward the finish around 10 or 11, you started at 10 o'clock. This makes no sense to me. There's literally nothing else on. At sports bars across the country, they're changing ESPN because ESPN's running a rerun of the Home Run Derby. As exciting as that was, it was. I'm not going to lie about that. Don't start sending stupid Home Run Derby tweets in. As exciting as that was, it was a rerun of a Home Run Derby. That's what was on ESPN. If you're telling me sports bars across the country weren't looking for something else to put on, you're insane. And they could have had the main event of this thing land sometime between 10, 11, maybe 11:30, and have all the eyeballs on it because there's nothing else going on in the sports world. I mean, because sports fans, for the most part, ESPYs did huge ratings. That wasn't sports fans. That was Caitlyn Jenner. That's people very interested in seeing what happened there because the damn thing doesn't usually even run on ABC.
Right.
Usually runs tape delayed on ESPN.
Right, right.
So that was all a big marketing push. You can't fight the networks. Don't send in tweets about Caitlin or anything like that. Those aren't necessarily sports fans there. So you had an empty night. You start this thing super late, and this main event doesn't even happen until after midnight, and it was lackluster at that from what you're saying.
Well, I just thought it was just ugly. You know, for Frank Mir to – he's won two in a row. He beat Bigfoot and now beat Todd Duffy. Both of them first-round finishes. That's great. He just looked really – he said he was fighting emotional. It just looked like an ugly scrap, and he was the one who connected first. They were standing in the middle of the ring throwing haymakers.
They're probably tired. It was so late.
Right. They probably wanted to take a nap, all of that stuff.
Because they're heavy. You can't make heavyweights fight so late.
That said, there was a lot to love about this main card. Tony Ferguson wins a huge fight over Josh Thompson. A great fight. Ferguson looked amazing. Josh, super durable, so Ferguson couldn't put him away. Our boy Kevin Lee wins in the first round via submission. And so here's what you've got. I know this isn't ideal for anybody other than me, but I want to say it out loud. Ferguson is on a 6-fight win streak. Lee is on a 4-fight win streak. I would love to see these two guys next. Now, Ferguson...
Why you gotta make both the Michigan guys fight each other?
Because I think that would be an awesome fight.
Like,
that's why.
Like, we can only... Like, this. What is this, Hunger Games? We can only have, like, one from each state?
Yes, we've got to get out of our capital and then get to... Yeah, I just think that's a great fight. That said, Ferguson called out all the people in the top 10, which I think is the right move for him. Just as a fan, watching these two guys grow, I'm loving what they're doing out of Michigan. Manny Gamburian wins a big one over Scott Jorgensen, and Holly Holm stays undefeated and wins her second fight in the UFC. So a big night of fights that, as you said, show up at 1 in the morning.
I, you know, and I'm watching, and again, I get up early. Fine. But it's kind of ridiculous to me when I realize watching last night, I'm not probably not going to see Kevin Lee till like almost 11 o'clock, which is essentially when his fight happened.
Yeah, it was like 10:45 or something.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, this is starting to drive me insane. Like, it's almost like they're just doing it to piss me off at this point. Because seriously, I mean, nobody can think that this thing ending at 1 in the morning is a good idea. It's the middle of the week. You can make your weekend arguments all you want with me, which I still think are BS for the most part. Because unless you're Floyd Mayweather, nobody's trying to do this. And even Floyd starts his fights earlier so that they're usually done by midnight. So you can't convince me that this isn't holding them back at this point. You have to be such a destination to want to hold that kind of time. And they're not anymore. And you know who really isn't? Mirren Duffy. I love both the dudes.
Right.
I love watching heavyweights fight. I mean,
totally.
But that is not a freaking 12 in the morning destination fight on a freaking Wednesday night, Thursday morning.
Well, no, because you know as well as anybody that the way the karmic universe works is that if you stay up to watch that fight, it would have been all five rounds.
Oh, they would have all been all five rounds. Well, I told you, I ordered UFC 189 at home, one of the first ones I've ordered at home in a while, and we were done with the first three fights in 25 minutes.
Right.
So, I mean, it ended up lasting a little longer, but yeah, that's... It's just not making sense to me, and you can argue DVR as you want with all you want with me, but I would ask you. You work your a typical, you know,
sure.
shift every day. I know you come in early, but you're kind of like a 9-to-5
yep,
dude.
Yep, for sure.
You know this is going to be spoiled before you have a chance to catch it on DVR.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a Thursday, and nobody's working all day. They're on the computer. They're checking things out. I mean, this isn't even Sunday. First thing you can do when you wake up because
right.
you're not going
yep.
to work is check your DVR and watch that. That's if you want to be that dude that has to watch fights at 8 or 9 in the morning when you
right.
wake up first thing
right.
so you don't get spoiled. This one's going to get – no. You know, I want to see Kevin Lee fight. I'll dig up the DVR recording for that. I'll see Tony Ferguson. I really want to see Holly Holm, actually. I'll watch this Mir fight because I know it's a minute now. But it's stupid. It's just stupid to run this live event when nothing else is going on in the sports world and have it go until 1 in the morning on the East Coast.
Speaking of that, you get another one this weekend, UFC Fight Night 72 as we go to Scotland. Bisping and Talis Lettis, that will be the main event. Ross Pearson and Evan Durham is the co-main event. You also get Beck Roddy Rawlings. She will be on the card. So if you're looking for some fun MMA this weekend, you will still have it if you haven't had your fill from Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, and now again on Saturday. Two other things before we take off. Ken mentioned the ESPYs. I just want to say congratulations to Ronda Rousey for winning her ESPY
last night. Verbal KO of Floyd
and
Mayweather.
Her verbal KO of Floyd Mayweather, where she said, what's it like to have a woman beat you?
Yes.
This time.
Yes. So do you think Floyd will actually acknowledge her at this point?
I don't have any idea.
I mean, you know, smartest thing in the world for him to do is not to do it.
Right.
Because he can't actually go in there and fight her. There's no winning in that situation.
No.
Because otherwise he beats up another woman
right.
or he gets beat up by a woman. I mean, I'd pay up. God, I'm trying to think. Like, maybe that's a paycheck pay-per-view. You know, you might be able to get me to drop a paycheck. I'm not committing 100%. Okay, let's say this. Okay, so this Pacquiao thing.
Sure.
That was the Pacquiao Mayweather thing. It was $100.
Yep.
So Mayweather Pacquiao is $100. What would your price point be, considering people would probably have parties and have people over and? This would be probably the most... I mean, think about how much Mayweather-Pacquiao was talked about. Ronda Rousey, crossover UFC star, man fighting a woman, the man who beat women, fights the toughest woman on the planet. What is your price point for that pay-per-view?
200.
Yeah, I was thinking $249.99. And I think we would all pay that.
Hands down.
We'd at least find somewhere to watch it.
Totally.
When the bar does the stupid thing where they try to charge $30, I'm throwing the money at the guys.
Yep.
Like, here you go.
Just let me in.
Take it. Yeah, $249.99.
I mean, look, let's be clear.
Let us know on Facebook what your price point would be for Mayweather Rousey.
That is the question of the week. What would be your pay-per-view threshold for Mayweather Rousey? We will ask that on Facebook. But let's be perfectly clear. We are not advocating or saying that this will happen because it just won't happen.
No.
And then the only other thing that I wanted to talk about, because I know that it's going to send Ken into full rage mode for the rest of the weekend, is the triumphant return of the Last Emperor. Fedor is coming back to fight Randy Couture.
It's not sending me into a rage. I just thought it was funny earlier. When did you bring it up when we were talking about real fighters that are real contenders right now? That just seems strange to bring up Fedor at that point.
No, I brought up fighters that could pull pay-per-view numbers.
See, that's another thing we could argue. Fedor never really pulled pay-per-view numbers. Strikeforce went out of business, folks. Let's remember that. So as much as you want to say that they did and didn't pull.
Okay, so he says he's coming back. His manager says his tune-up fight will be in Russia and then will TBA, right? Like, where is he going to?
God, tune-up fight? This is stupid. This is a tune-up fight. I get he's got to train, but come on.
He's 38 years old, although he looks like he's 60.
And again, I'm not taking anything away from what he did and how amazing he was in his career.
No, but
I mean, I think I jokingly asked the question on Facebook, but I do think it's certainly suspicious that he decides to unretire from MMA now that Brock Lesnar's totally locked up. And if you think Brock Lesnar wouldn't beat the living hell out of Fedor at this point, you're just not being realistic with yourself. I'm sorry. Look at those two dudes and where they are in their careers and the punishment they've taken.
So, okay, so let's play this out. Given the fact that we've already seen the formula played out on Bellator, is that where he ends up and that's Randy
they've
and Fedor?
They've got the money. They've got the money and they could do it. I mean, I have to wonder how much UFC would really be interested in this fight. I think Dana's, you know, he's made pushes before. He's also a guy that knows how to hold a grudge, but he's also a dude that he and Tito Ortiz had a lot of grudges and made a lot of money with each other. So I don't know. If he can promote this fight as Randy Couture Fedor, he might want to try to make that fight. Randy right now is officially where? Is he still with Bellator? Is he kind of in that gray area?
I don't actually know
right
where. I think he's in the gray area, but I'm speaking off the cuff here. I don't actually know. Because
Randy has publicly stated he'd have to think about it. And before he said he's not fighting again. So he said if it's Fedor, he'd have to think about it. I don't have a problem with that fight. I just really think we're way past the Fedor train at this point.
And I'm not saying we're not past the Fedor train, but I guess if you're a competitor in this space and you saw what you were able to do with the dumbest fight ever in Kimbo Ken Shamrock, right? The number that they were able to do of 2 million people.
Oh, yeah.
What are you able to do with Fedor and Randy? If that's a thing. And then on the opposite...
I think Randy is your key there. That's what's totally most interesting about this.
But on the opposite side, on the UFC side, Andre has said he would like to revenge that loss. So two questions. A, should he do that? Because he's kind of on this train towards a title shot. Why would you take a chance to do this insane thing that you don't need to do? And if he gets into the UFC... what do you do with him?
I don't think that's why I really think this is going to be a pass for those guys. I may be wrong in 3 days. Well, here Dana's finally inked the fight he's been trying to ink for a lifetime at this point. But I really think UFC takes the pass here. Viacom, they're the company that's kind of done this before, and they probably got the money to throw at it, and they can make the Friday night fight happen with Fedor. The only way this works financially for UFC is if it's a pay-per-view, and I just don't know if Fedor has the drawing power. People are going to freak out on me, but I really don't think he has the drawing power without Randy. Now, maybe they can get them both, and this is a feature fight, but then all of a sudden...
is that UFC 200?
You know, I don't know, but you certainly are going to have a situation where that is exclusively a feature fight, and we haven't really seen that in the UFC in a while. I mean,
Tony was the last one.
Right, yeah. I mean, a lot of people were starting to say that with Arlovski, and look what he did. So I think they can judge talent pretty well. Bellator, it's going to be interesting. Because I think they've got the money to do it. They might have the money to make the deal as well. Not only the money that has to go into the deal, but the insanity that's going to happen around the deal with M1.
And I won't get into any of that, but Google
whatever,
it if you're interested. Just Google Dana White and M1 and you'll see.
M1, the Russian mob.
You'll get the gist of what you had to go
through. It's going to be some type of insane negotiation at this point. I don't blame Fedor for fighting again because he's going to make some money somewhere. I'm a little surprised he didn't just try to make M1 something, which tells me that...
Well, his manager was talking about that, but I don't know that that's a... I mean...
We tried for a while. Showtime even tried for a while. They gave him a good run after the Strikeforce thing was
done.
But
it just didn't work.
No.
So
we didn't know these dudes, and every card had to have 87 Russians on it.
But this...
And you can't make that a worldwide promotion. I'm not disparaging Russian fighters. They're some of the best in the world.
I'm agreeing with you, and I'm saying if you're trying to make a comeback... and you're doing it publicly, right? You're literally saying, I am 38, I am making a comeback. It takes a little bit of the shine away if you're doing an M1 Russian-only event that we have to pay $3 on pay-per-view to stream, as opposed to do one fight in Russia to get your rust off or whatever you need to do, and then go to Bellator because that's the only one that makes any sense at all on any level.
I do find it interesting, though, is it's a situation where... even a year ago, I don't know if we would have been in this place where we would have said that with Bellator. because, I mean, remember, for a long time, to their detriment, I think they stuck with that tournament-only format. They've obviously added feature fights since then. They've obviously done some other things. We're in a very interesting place where, you know what, Fedor might have somewhere to fight with a decent amount of eyeballs, and that's Bellator. Could he go to UFC? Yes. UFC's not going to go bankrupt their organization, though, and they're not going to bend the rules now if they weren't going to bend the rules 5 years ago.
And I would say that you know as well as I do, Randy's only signing for a feature fight.
Right.
Randy's not signing to come back to Bellator if that's indeed what happens. Fedor, given the talent level of Bellator, not unlike the talent level of Invicta, you know, you've seen some fighters come out of Invicta that just can't hold a candle to the women in the UFC. The fighters at the level of Bellator, I think that Fedor could be a champ again in Bellator.
I don't think he would necessarily want that, though.
But he could. Like, if he wanted to fight till he was 41 or 42, he could do that in Bellator, and obviously could not in the UFC. He would be smashed by probably Frank Mir.
Wow, that's a bold statement. Frank Mir wants that fight, too, by the
way. I know he does, but he would probably smash him.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So I'm going to wait. This is a wait-and-see attitude, because I saw this probably a couple hours before you did, and then you texted me. Very excited.
I was excited.
Yeah,
that's fun.
I took the piss right out of that.
Yes, well, because that's what our friendship is based on.
Right.
I get excited about something. You tell me it's stupid.
Right. I didn't tell you it was stupid. I said probably just negotiating. We'll wait and see. And then I told you the Russian mob was probably involved. And maybe Slava Fetisov. I'm not sure.
Clearly Slava Fetisov.
We must fight for our country.
Stop trying to leave hockey money. Players. You make money now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's negotiating.
You know, go home.
I put that in quotes.
I love that you're admiring your work on your phone for no reason whatsoever. As if that was the finest thing you've ever crafted.
You were so excited. I feel actually bad now. I didn't even think about that. Like, and then Joe checked in. Don't play with my emotions. I'm like, shut up.
Show
both
up
of you.
To the show. Then we won't.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at that. Wow. That's some misplaced anger right there. I guarantee that was for me. I'm apologizing for that right now.
All right. This weekend, you got Bisping and Talis Latis.
Oh, I like Bisping.
We will we'll cover all of the.
Isn't that weird to say now?
That is weird to say.
But I like when watching him fight because I always think he's going to get killed, but sometimes he doesn't.
We will watch it and have all of the results on Twitter. You can follow the Ken Evans at Polymath and Vine or at Wow Show. We will have results.
See, we don't even give your Twitter out anymore, Joe.
I don't even remember what it is.
Well, that's because he hides it from the government.
He does. So we'll follow all of that stuff along. And next week, a little bit quieter as we have the countdown to UFC on Fox in Chicago. That is next week. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.